This is the Biscuits and Morning, Biscuits and Gravy Morning Show. And Jim, how are you doing today?
Tell me about yourself.
I'm doing fantastic. I'm pretty content, pretty happy. Sometimes I'm happy and I don't know why.
Well, I'm still doing better than I deserve.
Yeah? how so?
Well, what if we got what we deserved?
Oh, well, yeah, then we'd be in real big trouble. Absolutely. So, I'm going to switch over. Every week, you and I create this spreadsheet about objects, things we'll talk about. So, Jim, we got a whole list of stuff. Let's give out you want to start with our shout-outs for today?
Sure, why not?
You go with yours, and I'll go with mine.
Well, of course, we got a lot of friends that are Doctor Who fans. Carrie, Matt Mitchell, got a Christian brother out in Cambridge, Ontario. Mm-hmm. Stuart James Takahashi Gray, and up in Canadian Yukon, Vitol Jordan and his crew. We've got some folks from India that are listening in that have a Christian martial arts ministry they're doing there. Jagjivan Malipudi in India.
Say that name again.
Jagjivan Malipudi.
I'm glad you can pronounce that.
I'm not sure I pronounced it right.
I think I'd just call him Jog, right? Hey, Jog. Welcome to the show.
Shifu Richard Georgie in North End of Rochester, Michigan is listening in.
Seafood Richard and Georgie?
Sifu is a Chinese term like sensei.
Oh, okay. All right.
That's the idea. And Tony Collins of Akumaru Kempo out in Missouri is listening in. And hi to everybody.
Okay. Well, my shout-outs go to Greg Martin, the CEO of the Leading Edge Radio Network. Also, my friend Val, who we've got into some debates recently about that rotten apple syndrome thing we talked about last week, and he said I made him think. So shout out to Val. Val and I go back a long ways. He would drive a truck and come through Alamogordo here every now and then, and he would call me and say, hey, let's go meet at the truck stop. Well, I'll buy you a burger. So a great guy, Val. And of course, Dawn listens in. Thank you so much to all of you for listening in. We have a lot of fun here. I got to tell you how this works. And Jim, please take no offense to this, but Jim and I talk on the phone at least every other day now these days. Wouldn't you say that's about right?
That's pretty close to right.
Right. So, and I thought this would be great to have him kind of, if I can bottle Jim up and not take the cork out until Saturday mornings. That was the original concept. It's not working.
It's not working.
No. So, because, I mean, we were on the phone a good 40, at least an hour, 45 minutes to an hour last night. And the only reason we were, that's a small conversation for us. The only reason was I just had to cut him loose because I was dead tired. The reason I was tired was the day before, I filled in at the local radio station here for Mike Shinneberry, a friend of mine who his father is very ill, so he had to leave the state, asked me to fill in for a few shows for him. And his show is very early for me, 7 o'clock in the morning. I usually leave my house for work about 7:30, 7:40. So his show starts at 7, so I had to, you know, get up way earlier than I usually do. And then it was a Thursday morning show, and I had originally had been looking for a guest, and I called a friend of mine, Rocky, and asked her if she would come on. She said she couldn't. She had a prior commitment, but she was going to put me on the spot and ask me to host a political debate on live television that very same night, last night, or Thursday night at the time. And I had never done anything like that. I've been on television before when I was a police chief that, you know, the news team would stick a mic in my face and, you know, do you have any leads? No, leave me alone, you know? So I've been on television before. That wasn't a big deal. But being there for 2 hours on the stage, not being the center of attention, but close to them, very, very nervous. And in Jim, have you ever moderated a debate?
No, I haven't.
Well, they make it look so easy on TV, but there's actually a process. You give the first person a question, and then the other two get 30 seconds to rebut a rebuttal. And then the next person gets the next question, and then you flip-flop, and you go across your sheet, and there's a specific order that has to be done. And I have a tick sheet, and I was trying to get into the right order. I got through the debates for the county commissioners. No problem. Not a hitch. Not at all. Couple of them, I had to, okay, thank you very much, cut them off and tell them their time was up. But then we took a 10-minute break. They went to commercial, and then we came back, and we were the two district attorney candidates were debating. So going back and forth just between two candidates versus three, you would have thought it would have been a lot easier. I messed up, Jim.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I did. I gave one candidate two questions in a row. And I caught it. I caught it. And I just knew everybody else was going to catch it, too. So I gave him a question. His opponent got a rebuttal. Then I gave him another question. His opponent gave him a rebuttal. I thought, this is not fair. I should not have done this. This was a mistake on my part. So what I did was, the second candidate, I gave him two questions in a row, and then I went right back into the right order. And after the program, I went to the president of the Otero County Conservative Group, who hosted this, and I said, did you catch what I did? She said, I did, and I also caught that you fixed it. So I was good with that. I was good with that. If you ever get the chance, Jim, to host any kind of a debate, it's fun. It really, really is.
Sounds like you had a good time at it.
I did have a good time, and not only that, I learned a lot. There's a couple of candidates I narrowed down who I'll vote for. I'm pretty confident in who I'm going to vote for. Let me put it that way. There is one candidate on the district attorney side I am very confident I will not vote for. Will not. And I will say this, he's the incumbent. From what I learned last night, there's more morale issues in his department, recruiting issues, and a huge caseload that can't be handled correctly because of that. So, sounds to me like there's time for a change. But anyway, you mentioned
real
doctor-
quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
Real quick shout out to my neighbors, the Wasicks.
Oh, the Wasicks. Hello. They live next door to you, Jim? Do they?
Actually, they do.
Oh, well, that's cool. All right, looks like...
RJ and Sandy Wasick.
Oh, okay. All right. You had mentioned Doctor Who a while ago. How long have you been watching that show?
Oh, goodness. Off and on for years. I mean, I remember being a little kid catching episodes from time to time. Of course, on the CBC, the Canadian station, because it comes on the BBC.
The British Broadcasting Corporation.
Absolutely. But, you know, I really got turned on to it when I was about 15.
Uh-huh.
15, 16, right around 1985. That would have been at the time when Tom Baker was the actor that was playing Doctor Who.
Okay.
But it's one of, if not the longest running science fiction television shows that has ever existed. It's been on the air for a total of 50 years.
That's a long running.
For a science fiction show, that's an enormously long time.
And you, of course, you obviously haven't been watching it that entire time.
No, of course not.
I was wondering, is it even possible for somebody to watch all of them that have been produced?
You can buy all of the DVDs.
Yes,
they're all available.
Yes, but the question is it possible to watch all of them?
It is. It would take something of a time commitment to do so.
I don't think I'd have the time.
It could theoretically be done. Right.
So how many episodes have you not seen? Or is that even a number too high for you to calculate?
I don't know offhand.
Okay.
I don't know. It went off the air for quite some time, and the people that really love Doctor Who, you know, there was a long period of time where we were starving. We had nothing. And of course, up until that point, we were all used to having British actors play Doctor Who. And there was one actor, I can't think of his name offhand, but played one made-for-TV movie for Fox. Mm-hmm. That was a Doctor Who episode. And it was the only American Doctor Who ever, and he only had that one made-for-TV movie.
And who was the actor? Does that come to mind?
Oh, goodness, I should know this. I can't think of his name. Give me 2 seconds, I'll have it looked up, though.
Sure.
I feel like Carrie Mitchell's probably screaming psychically at me saying, you know who it is, you dummy?
She probably is. I would imagine, knowing Carrie, she is probably a huge Doctor Who fan.
Oh, she is.
I'll bet if anybody that we know has watched all of the episodes, it would be her. But probably not. But if there were, it would be her.
Right.
So
I don't think she's even...
Okay, now,
go ahead.
You got me to watch one episode last night. And I watched the episode from... I'm trying to remember. I think it was from 2007. It was the episode called Blink. Or there was another name for it you gave it, but it was Blink on the format I listened to.
Blink is the name of the actual episode, but it is, for the Whovians out there, it's the one where, well, the Whovians already know this, but there's an introduction of a new villain, or a race of villains called the Weeping Angels.
Yes.
And they are some really, really weird, they look like any stone statue of angels that you would ever see. But they have some unique qualities to them.
If you don't look at them, they can move just like a human being, but the minute you look at them, they turn to stone.
Absolutely.
And it's supposed to be a fact of their biology. Yeah, yeah. So what is overall, let's just touch on this real briefly. What overall is the concept of Doctor Who, other than he is a time traveler with a British accent?
Well, no, that's it. We're done.
Okay.
No, the story's changed up a little bit. Basically, you've got this race of time travelers that are called the Time Lords, and he's one of these. Comes from the planet Gallifrey and the constellation of Cerberus and so forth. And, but he's the last of his race. And he has a time machine that's called a TARDIS.
Right.
Which is an acrostic for time and relative dimensions in space. And, he usually has a companion, so he has, you know, another actor there to kind of bounce some of his stuff off of and interact with. But they travel everywhere in human history, everywhere in out in planets and out in the universe. So you'll have a real interesting mix of cultures that actually existed here on Earth and the fictional stuff out amongst the stars. And a lot of different circumstances, which interesting about it is while at times they do keep it light, there's actually a lot of pretty serious drama that takes place as well.
Was the actor's name you were looking for Perry Brown?
No, I don't believe it was.
Okay, I've got a message from Carrie that says Perry Brown, so I'm not sure.
I would not argue with her.
Okay.
that doesn't strike a chord in my memory, but I would not argue with Carrie. It's not a wise thing to do anyways.
Yeah, I'm having some flashbacks as we speak. Just kidding, Carrie. I do remember one incident with Carrie in the dorm where she snuck up behind me to smell my Adidas cologne. I didn't realize she was directly behind me. Things ensued. But anyway, Carrie says, oops. Anyway, hey, you know what? We're 16 minutes into the hour. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back right after this. The Biscuits and Gravy Saturday Morning Show is proudly brought to you by the Lee Ermey School for Motivational Speech. My audio file's not playing. That's all right. We're going to go without the breaks today. Maybe I can fix this in the meantime. So, anyway, Carrie's laughing right now. So, boy, you know, we get one bug worked out, and we end up getting some more bugs worked out. Have you noticed, or not worked in, I guess. Have you noticed that? It's really crazy.
Seems to be the way things work.
Yep. That's all right. That's all right. So, anyway, well, let's take a look back at our... Are we done with Doctor Who?
Oh, goodness. Doctor Who's one of those things that if anybody hasn't seen Doctor Who, this is one of those things you really got to check it out.
Uh-huh.
The only thing I'll tell you is that you don't have to go back 50 years and get started. You're not going to get lost that way.
Right.
When they restarted the series, they restarted with only the merest of homage to the older episodes. They really wanted to start fresh. And so what is now called season one actually started with Christopher Eccleston. One of the things that most Whovians will ask each other when they meet is, who was your Doctor Who? Right. As a favorite actor that plays Doctor Who. And another thing that's interesting about it is they actually build into the plot the opportunity to change actors from time to time without it being feeling forced.
Uh-huh.
But my favorite Doctor was David Tennant.
Okay. And why is he David, your favorite?
David Tennant brings a lot of heavyweight acting to the role. And I mean, we're sitting here talking about science fiction and the notion of bringing some really heavyweight drama to the mix.
Uh-huh.
Seems a little bit strained, but it's one of those things. It's unique. You really have to see it. 2007, it would have been season 3. David Tennant really started to come into his own, and there were some really good episodes in that season. You had Blink, which you mentioned with the introduction of the Weeping Angels.
Right.
Dealt with a lot of the interaction back and forth in time that got really interesting. The Family of Blood was a favorite, where the Doctor, for a period of time, forgets that he's a Time Lord and is functioning on Earth as a human, falls in love with a teacher, and then realizes he needs to take back on his persona as Doctor Who, and to him it feels like he's dying. Another episode that same season that was a favorite, I cried without shame, was
Jim?
It was not, I have no shame. A full box of tissue, but no shame.
Okay.
The Girl in the Fireplace.
Right.
And, you know, you can, there's places online where you can find these. If you've got cable, you can look it up on BBC America. And it's just something that is, it's really worth doing. Probably want to steer away from Torchwood if you want to keep it family friendly. But if you want to bring it down to a level, which is a spinoff series.
Right.
One of the characters out of Doctor Who had a spinoff series. Torchwood gets a little risque, but there was a series for kids called the Sarah Jane Chronicles. Now, that has since stopped because the lady who played Sarah Jane actually passed away. She had cancer.
Okay.
But while it was going, that was quite good.
Okay.
A lot of good stuff and worth checking out.
Just got a message from Carrie. She says that the Perry was the first companion to travel with the Doctor. That's who it was. He wasn't an actor.
Okay.
A character. So, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'm gonna have to watch. Yeah, go ahead.
Stuart James Takahashi Gray in Cambridge says he's seen all the episodes.
Really?
I'm assuming he means
from the beginning.
He says, by the way, the show aired November 23rd, 1963.
Interesting.
And he says that his favorite Doctor is Peter Capaldi.
Okay.
Which is the most recent one.
Uh-huh. You know, I used to think that Jack Lord was in Doctor Who at some point. I found out I was mistaken. He was in Doctor No, James Bond.
Right, right.
Misconception on my part. So, interesting. So, yeah, so he's seen all of them. I'm impressed. I'm very, well, as impressed as I can be. So, all right.
We'll initiate you into the deeper mysteries of being a Whovian. You are ankle deep in a broad ocean, my friend.
Well, you know,
welcome to the family.
I watched the episodes last night. I watched the Blink episode, but it was like in 18 different parts on YouTube. So it was kind of interesting. I kept clicking on the next part, not realizing that they play automatically in sequence. You just got to get through the ads here and there. So I guess that shows how much I lack in knowledge on YouTube. But a lot of people don't know this. You can actually find full movies on YouTube, too. Oh, especially old westerns. There's a lot of great old westerns on there. So, hey, let's move right along now, Jim. We're almost halfway through the program here in a few minutes. Did you know that beekeepers in the last 12 months, have lost almost? They've lost 44% of their colonies.
No, I'd heard that in the past there was some concern about bees dying, but I didn't realize it recently it had gotten that bad.
Well, my question is, when they lose that many colonies, I assume, you know, honey is not cheap to begin with. Right. I assume the price of the honey is going to go up. But at the same time, honey's not a product that I buy all the time. I like it, but I maybe buy it. Sometimes I buy it once a year. Sometimes I buy it like once every 2 years. It's just not one of those products I think of when I go to pick up the milk and eggs.
Right. Well, you know, one thing, now we talk about prepping just a little bit.
Yeah.
One of the things that honey is really good for.
It lasts forever.
Well, it does last forever. There's been honey that's been found in Egyptian tombs that is still edible and it won't make you sick. But an interesting use for honey is it actually will function as a topical antibiotic.
I did not know that.
Something on the order of like a Neosporin.
Okay.
And it works every bit as good as Neosporin, maybe even a little bit better. And you look at it and you're thinking, yeah, but wouldn't that get expensive? You look at the price of Neosporin, even the generic stuff.
Pound for pound, it's probably cheaper.
And buying honey is a lot cheaper, and then you've got other uses, other things you could. Don't put Neosporin on your English muffin.
Right.
Just don't.
Don't be like the lady in the hospital that asked for some more of that KY jelly to put on her biscuit.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't work so well.
You mentioned prepping. We talked about that last week, and actually I think that was part of the glitch that we had last week. But last week we were talking about air guns. Was it last week or the week before? I think it was air guns. That's a good, you know, the price of 22 ammunition is so high, if you can even find it.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. There's, I know here in town, it's hard to get it here in town because there's two stores that carry it, and almost as soon as the truck comes in with it, there's people waiting at the door for it. Especially at Walmart. I understand that Walmart's employees get first dibs on it. So, that, you know, take that for what that's worth. Big Five Sporting Goods here in town, as soon as the truck comes in, they say they come in, their trucks come in on Friday mornings. And every time I've gone down there, people are just waiting at the door lined up for it. I was fortunate enough, 2 years, I have a friend who, her husband works at one of the gun shops here in town. And for a couple of months, she would call me and say, hey, the truck's coming in tomorrow. And I would go down to down there and pick up a few hundred, and I still have them. You know, in this day and age, I don't want to be one of those hoarders of ammunition, but I want to make sure I have enough ammunition to get more ammunition. You know what I mean? If I need to.
So, I'm afraid you do.
Yeah. The thing I've heard, you can hoard all the food you want for when the crisis hits the fan, but it's the guys with ammunition that are going to take it from you.
Goodness. So,
but yeah, and there's a lot of things about prepping. You know, I'm not a serious prepper. I've got enough ammunition, and I've got a small box of MREs and a few cans up in the cabinet. And that's pretty much all I need. I probably ought to go get me a water filter. You know, one of those water filters or something.
Yeah, there's some good one thing, like there's some, trying to think of the website now, but from time to time you come across, are you familiar with the British Birkfield,
no.
water filter?
No, but I'll have to check that out.
It's a little bit pricey, but it's reusable. But from time to time you can actually find a, they'll be like around $200 or $250.
Uh-huh.
It'll have a silver impregnated, ceramic filter. And after it's played out, you can actually wash it out and reuse it.
Right.
And it's safe to do that. It's used by, like, missionaries out on the field and so forth.
Right.
But you can find on, like, I believe Cheaper Than Dirt.
That's a great website.
Yeah. They have like, a clone set up that you can make out of 5 gallon buckets, buy their filters and all the hardware that comes with it, but then set yourself up with 5 gallon buckets. The British Birkfield is actually made out of stainless steel.
Huh.
So having the clone that you can make out of 5 gallon buckets is a way of bringing the price way down.
Right.
But one thing that's worth knowing with regards to water purification is, now you have to be a little bit careful about how you handle it, but there's a substance called resublimated USP iodine crystals. And it's, I mean,
am I going to have to know this for the test?
Yes, there's a test later, and it counts as half of your grade.
Okay.
One of the good things about,
I'm having flashbacks of Western Civ. Oh, well.
Hey, it was your dad. I liked his class well enough, I took it twice. Yeah. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. The cool thing about the resublimated iodine crystals is you can buy the stuff, and it's got a bottle that's set up especially for the way that it functions. But like 1 ounce of, or in a 1 ounce bottle, you'll have a tablespoon or so of these crystals in there, and you can purify thousands of gallons of water.
Uh-huh.
Now, if there's particulates in the water, you know, you can take some kind of a nuisance filter and filter those out. But as far as the water itself being safe to consume, you can purify thousands of gallons of water with a 1 ounce bottle of resublimated USP iodine crystals. And there's all kinds of different companies out there. You do not want to consume the crystals themselves, though.
Right. I can imagine.
That's the only trick to it.
You know, there's a lot of ways to collect the water. Some of which are illegal in some states. You can get in trouble if you just put a collection barrel outside of your house or whatever.
I don't get that.
I don't either. The government's claiming that they have the water rights. The president of the Hershey candy company has even come forward and said water is not a human right. I don't get that. I have a friend that says eating is a human right. Well, it's a human right to eat, but just because you're a human doesn't mean you get to eat. You know, there's biblical principles about that. If you don't work, you don't eat, period.
Right.
And so we could go a whole show on that. But
actually, that'd be a good topic for another show.
Yeah, absolutely. But anyway, I chased that rabbit trail long enough, and I forgot where the main path is.
So, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. So, but there's we were talking about collecting water. I got to tell you, here in New Mexico, water is a commodity just like electricity and gas. And I don't know if I've told you that before, but the tap water here, it's only good for washing your dishes and your clothes. And even then, I'm not too sure about. We have companies here in town. All they do is sell water. And they will even deliver it to your house. I usually go in the grocery store and buy a 3 gallon jug of it. It has a tap, and I stick it in the refrigerator. And matter of fact, I bought 3 gallons of water about 2 weeks ago. It's time for me to go buy another one today. And for an emergency, I keep a couple of gallons up in my cabinet as well. But yeah, the water here, they have certain days too. Only on those days can you wash your vehicle between certain hours and such. We do live in the desert. Yeah, go ahead.
Right. I've got a comment come in from Tony Collins out of Missouri.
Uh-huh.
He says, water is a human right. He says you can't live without it for longer than a few days. I'll be honest, I tend to agree.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. Did I say I didn't agree? I don't think I did.
Well,
the
point might have got lost when you're talking about
eating is a human right. Yeah, yeah. And eating is a human right too, but you have a right to do other things so that you're able to eat.
Right.
That would be my point.
Well, and because it kind of goes along the lines of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Okay, well, let's leave the how happy we are with our food aside and talk about you've got to be able to eat to live.
Right. No, and I wasn't agreeing with the president of
water,
Hershey.
And
either.
Water even more so. Yeah, people that control it at that level.
You're talking about the establishment when you talk about people who are presidents of big corporations. That's part of the establishment. We've heard that word a lot recently. You look at Donald Trump and they say, well, he's not part of the establishment. And, no, he's not, but he's part of an establishment, which is closely related to the establishment.
Right. Tony does go on to point out, though, that we can live without electricity and gas and other stuff like that.
You know,
but as far as the basics of just survival.
Sure, sure. But you know, you look at that. We can live without them, but for how long? I mean, when you think of the grid and our society has become so dependent on those utilities. I know people that freak out when the cable goes out for an hour. Think about them who are so dependent on their utilities being without electricity for, say, even just 90 days. And, of course, then there's the other things that you have to consider, too, life support systems in the hospital and nursing homes and things like that. But there's a big picture in all of that, and I would agree with Tony completely with that. I sure would. Thoughts, Jim? I always feel like I'm talking to that guy in Star Trek. Thoughts, Jim? It's life, Jay, but not as we know it. Anyway.
It's worse than that. He's dead, Jim.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. So, hey, let's switch gears a little bit, because this is really on the hot topic. This is on the front burner right now. And I'm sure everybody's heard about it, but the Obama administration supposedly has sent out or has made the announcement that they're going to send out letters to every school district saying pretty much that you will now allow your children who identify as a different sex than what they were born as the opportunity to choose the restroom that they want to use. And in this letter, they're saying those who refuse to comply, I'm paraphrasing, may be subject to losing federal funding. There are now 5 states, Texas being the first one, from what I understand, to say pretty much, forget you. I'm trying to be as nice as I can.
Go soak your head.
Yeah, soak your head. Yeah, absolutely. And then the White House came out yesterday, one of the spokesmen for the White House, in a press conference, and said, this is not a threat. These are guidelines.
Because Texas had said, don't threaten us.
Yes, yes. And they said, these are not a threat. These are guidelines. Well, my dad used to give me those guidelines like that, and I always took them as threats. If you don't get your grades up, you know, this is what's going to happen. You're going to get the belt. Yeah, those are guidelines. If then, that's a guideline, but it's also a threat. If then. If then.
Yeah. Well, as soon as you say if and then, you're saying under these circumstances thus, and under these circumstances there will be consequences. There's no mistaking that. That is an ultimatum, a threat by any other name. Done.
And here's the issue that I have with it. The White House thinks we're stupid. They really do. As long as you're not threatening, you know, they spin these words. Politicians are really, really good at this. And I've noticed this even with Hillary Clinton recently. She said she was not under investigation, that there was just a security inquiry from the FBI. And the FBI, the director, came out and said, we've never heard of the term security inquiry. We are a criminal investigative agency, and that's what we do, and that's what this is. They kind of put her in the place.
Everybody wants to reset things so that they come off in the best light. Tony out of Missouri says, the Obama administration is sick and evil. You use the bathroom of your sex, not how you feel you are, but what you are. He said he threatened to take away school funding from schools, who do not follow that new ruling, which is basically what you said. But again, I think we're all agreeing that's a threat. I guess the problem that I have is we're all paying into these taxes. We're paying in, on every level of society, state included, paying into federal. So I'm looking at it going, on what basis are you denying us our own tax dollars back?
Right.
You know, at some point you're trying to dictate to us our conscience. Now, I've got a little bit of a different take on this. Not that I'm disagreeing, but it's just a different way to float the conversation.
Okay, let's go for it.
Okay. Now, I definitely hope, so that I'm not misunderstood. What the Bible says about homosexuality, it says, and I agree with. God said it, that settles it, I'm done. But for the sake of a conversation that at least has some tolerance to it, Because let's face it, God gave man free will. Even though there are consequences for the choices that we make, we still have free will. So fine, they've got free will. And the homosexuals, transgenders, and so forth, they want to say that they are not perverts. They want to say that they are not predators. Okay, for the sake of this conversation, let's go ahead and give you the benefit of the doubt. Let's say that that's not the case. I'm not so sure I buy that, but let's say that's not the case. If you want to come off as members of society that are productive and are reasonable, then you need to put us, the rest of society, in a position where we can protect the most vulnerable sections of our society, speaking of our children. And if we can't do that, then you have become part of the problem.
Which?
Because now the predators are hiding behind the idea that they're gay. Well, what if they're not gay? How do you tell the difference between somebody that's a pervert that just wants to go into the wrong bathroom because he wants to be next to my daughter and somebody who is genuinely gay and has no interest in my daughter? If you don't put me in a position where I can tell the difference, then my children end up being at risk by default.
That's true.
And if you and if you don't have the basic logical skills to understand what you're doing to the rest of society when you try to force something like this, then the problem is on you. And since they're the minority, and granted, we're a republic, not a pure democracy.
Right.
But in a democratic republic, the majority still ends up ruling, even though we do give consideration to minorities. So now, what we've done is we've turned everything around to where now the minority is ruling over the majority.
Yeah.
And that's completely antithetical to what the American experiment was supposed to be about.
I agree with that. And you said something last week, too, along the lines of that it tends to be in society today that it's the people who are demanding change that are the people creating the conflict.
These days, I would agree with that. I mean, I'm not under any circumstances. You go back in time, and there were things that needed to change. You cannot, in our founding documents, say that all men are created equal, but then leave certain ethnicities out of that.
Right.
Okay? You can't. So there were things that needed to change, but the change in those cases was simply recognizing we needed to be consistent.
Yeah.
Okay. Today, those are not the fights that we're fighting. We're fighting for this gender confusion that ends up putting everybody at risk. And I guess the problem is,
you know,
that I have with this is these folks did not, for the past several decades, there was no problem with them figuring out which bathroom to go into. So why is it that all of a sudden, now there's this great big push? Now it has to be an issue.
You know, I don't like that term, gender confusion. I think that's very, I don't know if I want to say misleading. It's inaccurate. You know what gender you are. Just because you say you feel like a different gender, that doesn't mean you're confused. It just means you're lying to yourself and trying to lie to everybody else, in my opinion. I just don't like that term.
Yeah, I guess the only exception that I'll only disagree with you to this degree.
And I think I know where you're going. Can I guess?
Go ahead.
There are medical situations where people have a chromosome, I don't know what I'm looking for here, but there are medical situations where there is some sort of gender identity crisis from birth. Is that where you're going? No?
No.
Okay. But would you agree with that?
If somebody has a medical condition that can actually be diagnosed, I would recognize that that's legit.
They're rare, but they do happen.
Right.
So go ahead with your thought.
My thought is that in the first generations, we knew exactly what and who these people were.
You're right.
Okay. There was no confusion. But now we're several generations in. And we're dealing with a generation where they are confused about the morality of this. They think, they've been told often enough that some people are really born this way.
Yeah.
And now we've got young people that come to their confusion, honestly. Now those of us that were raised in a proper fashion, that we know if you have these parts, you're a boy, you have these parts that you're a girl, and there is no confusion. But you've got kids that were not raised that way, that have had this stuff hammered at them, from infancy, that all of this is okay. I mean,
have
Jason,
we,
when you
have
and
we
I were
become
in school,
so warped spiritually that that's the case? I mean, isn't there something? For example, I have a problem, and I'm going to switch gears here just for a second, but I'll come back. There's a lot of atheists out there, but I firmly believe that there are no atheists. They're just people that are denying it to themselves because everything in nature says we have a divine creator, an organized system, a creator. So going back to that, even people who are being lied to, wouldn't there be, and maybe I'm wrong, and maybe I should be agreeing with you on this, and maybe I will by the end of the show, but isn't there something inside of everybody, no matter what they're told, that they know the truth about certain things themselves?
There should be.
I love that long sigh. There should be. I would agree with that.
There should be. But here's the problem. The way that we're moving along, we are losing things that should be common sense. For example, and we can take it clean out of this conversation altogether. The Bible talks about that the time will come when they will be without natural affection.
And do you think that's what this is referring to right now?
No. It could, but I'm actually making another point.
Okay.
It's natural. Animals do not need to be taught to care for their young. It's something that comes to them naturally.
Right.
It's a matter of instinct. And yet we're getting to a point where parents are not caring for their children. This is something that is so basic, it should be natural. And I'm making a comparison between a natural affection of a parent for a child and a gender identity that ought to be a natural, easily understood thing. We are getting so far afield, and sin is having such an effect that it really is creating a genuine confusion in the youngest generation, which is part of the reason why I do believe that we're living in the last days. It's not the major reason why, but I think it does contribute to that conversation.
Okay. Well, let's go back to just the fact, and we need to jump off this topic in a minute because we got a bunch of other stuff to talk about, and we've only got about 12 minutes left, I think. So anyway, going back to the administration sending out these letters, just the fact that they're doing that alone appalls me and sickens me because, you know, like you said, it's a taxation thing too. But what in the world? I don't remember a president that has ever made a decree or guidelines or whatever you want to call a threat to something that should be a state thing anyway. And I believe that most of the states, if they have their way, things are going to stay the same. They wouldn't even consider changing anything. I'm just appalled that the current administration, this is a tyrannical move on their part.
Well, and look at the party that's perpetrating.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's just something to ponder. Jim, if you don't have any thoughts on that one, do you have your Excel spreadsheet up?
I do.
Okay. Pick one of the list. What do you want to move to next? This is fun.
Oh, let's see here. Well, we've done the Doctor Who thing.
Yeah. We do have to talk about the woman that laundered the money, because I promised somebody we'd bring that up.
Go ahead.
So we'll do that real quick. This woman in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and I use the term loosely, laundering money, she stole $29,503 from a laundry apartment, a laundry room in an apartment complex where she worked. That's a lot of coin. I mean, you know, that's a lot of coin. I figured out if you just take 28,000 quarters, that weighs 140 pounds.
Did she vote Democrat?
I don't know. I don't know.
Well, it'd be a lot of hope and change.
Yeah, there you go. She hopes she got away with the change. So I remember one of my young jobs in high school, I had many, was cleaning car wash pits. And I got paid $50 every week in quarters, which was fantastic because I used that money from that job to go to the arcades. But $50 in quarters was even a little, it was heavy in my pockets. I can't imagine stealing over 140 pounds of quarters. There's a joke in there somewhere.
She probably did it over time.
Yeah, probably, but who knows? We have some weird things happening here in New Mexico. I'll tell you that. I'll plug this too real quick. Last week I was awakened about 2:30 in the morning. Maybe it was 2 weeks ago with this loud sound, and I never heard it before. And apparently it was an Amber Alert. I looked on my phone, got the information. I would highly recommend everybody set your settings on your phone to get those kind of notifications. If you have an iPhone, absolutely, it's in your settings. They not only do the Amber Alerts, but they do emergency weather alerts. It's since gone off too because we had some high winds coming in. Hey, I wasn't riding my motorcycle that day. New Mexico, and I don't know if you know this or not, Jim, but we have monsoon seasons here. Flash flooding. There have been boulders that have rolled off the mountain down the street. We've had cars floating down the street. You wouldn't think of this place having flash floods and monsoon season because we're in a desert basin. But we do. And it's been crazy. I've actually gone out to the parking lot, after I got off work and had water, almost up to my waist, halfway between my knees and my waist. And it's fun driving out of that stuff, especially if you drive an old vehicle that likes to stall out when you're driving through deep water like that.
Right.
Makes it very fun and entertaining just trying to get home. You don't have flash flooding like that up Michigan too often, do you?
No.
I don't remember any of it.
Actually, we did have a couple of years back, we did have some flooding, and I have never in my life seen the kind of flooding that we had, but there was a lot of people got stranded for several days, had difficulty getting home.
Mm-hmm.
And this is in the Metro Detroit area.
Huh. Wow. I just don't bad weather, all I remember is snow and ice up there. I remember the blizzard of 78.
Yep.
Everybody still talks about that today. I remember when we moved up there just prior to that blizzard that summer, and our concern coming from Missouri was, oh, we're dreading the winters, and everybody said, oh, it's not that bad, don't worry about it. And then the blizzard hit, and we had, you know, 8-foot snow drifts in our front yard, and I thought, my goodness, if this is not bad, I'd hate to see the worst. Fortunately, that was the worst, but it was fun as a kid going out and tunneling through all that, and loved it. I hear you typing away in the background, Jim.
Yep, just a little bit.
Okay. So, you know, we're talking about the federal government fighting with the states over issues. It's even happening here in New Mexico with wolves. The federal government is wanting to deposit wolves onto some state land as part of a rehabilitation or repopulation effort. But the state, for whatever reason they have, is fighting with them, trying to get them to stop. It just amazes me everywhere we look, even with the ranchers. We got a rancher that lives probably 2 hours from here. He had a knock on his door by some federal agents, and they asked him, are you an extreme rancher? He said, I don't know what you mean by that. And they said, well, are you an extreme rancher? He goes, well, if you mean do I love what I do and I'm excited about providing for my family, I'm extremely happy about ranching. And this gentleman was also one of the ones that went up there in the Bundy situation, was one of the protesters up there. Our ranchers are really, really getting a hard time from the federal government over property and water rights, and even confiscating their cattle in some situations. Thoughts, Jim?
On that subject, or anything. Well, did you want to touch on the Bible and science, or did you want to save that for another time?
We can end on that briefly. We've got about 3 minutes left. I will say this, and you can give your thoughts on this. My dad used to say, when a scientist dug up a shovel with an artifact in it, that the scientists tend to say, this proves the Bible. My dad used to say, it does not. The Bible proves the authenticity of the artifact.
In an ultimate sense, I believe that's absolutely true.
Yeah. I believe there's a balance between the two when you talk that way. Yeah.
Well, the Apostle Paul does say, come, let us reason together. So if the Bible makes certain truth, I would agree with Richard Dawkins to this degree. He says that the Bible makes certain truth claims and that those need to be proven to be true or false. The difference between me and Richard Dawkins is he believes that they've been proven false. I believe that they've been proven true. But does the Bible, in an ultimate sense, need science to be proven?
No, I would say no.
No, it doesn't. But if the Bible's true, it's entirely reasonable to expect that science will back up the Bible. Now, let's flip the question just a little bit here. Does science need the Bible? Now, that's weird, but the point that I'm making there is that very often, because we have no moral guidelines, we ask, can we do something? And we never ask, should we?
Right.
And the moment that you start to ask a moral question about should we do this or that, there'll be a lot of debate. Well, there didn't used to be a lot of debate. We knew what was right. We knew what was wrong. And we did predicate it upon a certain moral compass. In this country, like it, hate it, whatever, that moral compass was the Bible.
And I'll even add to that, Jim, a lot of your beliefs in this, and which way you want to look at it, I think it comes from perspective, and your perspective can be influenced by your relationship. For example, there's a lot of things that I didn't like before I got married. I did not like opera. I still don't like most of it. I didn't like certain foods. And just a lot of things in general I didn't like. I didn't like musical movies. I like them now. And the reason is because I've developed a relationship with somebody that loves those things. And because of my love for her, I learned to like some of those things. I enjoy them. So I think a lot of it has to do with, and I believe her. I have a belief in, you know, she tells me something. So I will put that into light that those of us who are Christians, we have a relationship with the author of the Bible and the creator of the science.
Absolutely.
So that tends to give us a different perspective than somebody who just does not understand either one of those.
And the Apostle Paul, some people aren't even aware of this. The word science actually is in the Bible. The word science means nothing more nor less than knowledge.
Yes.
But Paul admonishes Timothy and says, beware of science, falsely so-called. The Bible is not hostile to science. But what we're calling science these days is hostile to the Bible because it has adopted a philosophy of naturalism and reductionist logic. But that's something we could probably pick up at another time.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of which, next time, let's try to throw somebody into the conversation with us, Jim, shall we?
Sounds good. Stuart James Takahashi Gray gives a little shout-out from Cambridge, Ontario. Says, great show, guys. Just enough biscuits, just enough gravy. See you next week.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We'll have the podcast up very, very shortly, too. I would like to thank the folks at the Leading Edge Radio Network. We do have a great time, and yeah, there is a difference between the biscuits and gravy, definitely. Jim's the biscuits, I'm the gravy. I'm just here to have a little fun. So enjoy your week, and as always, I always remind everybody I meet every week, spend some time with the ones you love, especially those kids. You won't forget it, and they won't regret it. Actually, that's the other way around. You won't regret it, and they won't forget it. We'll see you next time right here on the Biscuits and Gravy Morning Show.